Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and I am a massive soccer fan. You better believe I'll be watching this year's World Cup when it gets underway in Brazil. In fact, I might be taking some time off to do just that. But I've never actually been to a World Cup match. Even when the World Cup was practically happening in my own backyard at Giant Stadium 20 years ago, I totally missed out. Which is why I'm insanely jealous of one of our guests on the show tonight. George Vesey is a New York Times sports columnist whose latest book is called Eight World Cups. Want to know why? Because he's been to the past eight World Cups, from 1982 in Spain all the way up to 2010 in South Africa. He'll join us a little later on to talk about some of his favorite soccer-related songs. Plus, we'll hear some live music here in the studio from the L.A. band Kanwa Khan. Their lush, cinematic songs aren't about soccer, but I'll try not to hold that against them. So that's what's coming up later, but right now, we've got a special guest on the line.
Three, that's a magic number. Three. Yes, it is. It's the magic number.
Every once in a while, as you probably know, we ask someone to join us with a Pick 3 playlist of songs that have inspired them recently. And since my guest today has had a very busy month, we'll assume that he's needed a particularly big dose of inspiration. Marc Maron is the host of the wildly popular podcast called WTF. It features interviews with all manner of pop culture types. And just passed its 500th episode. Marc is also the star and creator of the TV show Maron, which recently began its second season on IFC. Marc joins me on the line from Los Angeles. Marc Maron, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks, man. Good to be here.
I want to congratulate you first on episode number 500 of the podcast, WTF. When the odometer turns to all those zeros, does that mean anything special to you?
Yeah, it means that I'm not really paying attention because I'm always surprised by it. You know, I got to that 500, and I don't really think in those terms. I don't really think in milestones. So when we were approaching it, it really became like, well, what are we going to do for that one? That one's got to be special, right? That seems like a lot of shows. And ultimately, it came together to be a very profoundly personal and an emotional show for me. But look, I'm grateful. I never thought I'd do 500 of anything good.
Well, and this 500th episode really basically does turn the mic on yourself, touching on a lot of things that we've heard about you and from you over the years, your family, love life, career, etc. But there's a really interesting moment near the beginning of the show where you talk about how you found your interview style because of Bob Odenkirk. I want to play this. This is my guest, Marc Maron, from episode 500 last week, setting up an interview from an even earlier episode of WTF.
There was a moment during that show that was sort of the portal to what WTF became and to what I became as a human being. It all sort of hinges a bit on Bob Odenkirk.
You know what I sensed about you, though, and because of what you're saying specifically, is I think I was that insane at one time. And I think that, you know, that you don't indulge that at all. Like, if those people are around you, you will sort of like, okay.
Well, out of self-preservation.
Right.
And but just also, I'm pretty crazy, too. I got a lot of... You know,
but you're not destructive. Do you feel like you are? I mean, you're not. You don't seem self-destructive.
You're right. Yeah.
I mean, it seems that.
Dude, I don't know. I got my own battles to fight. You know, they're not.
What's the biggest one?
Or pills.
But just the level of self-criticism.
Rage.
Yeah, you got the rage. Yeah.
Frustration, rage. I think, you know, in a weird way, one of the things I've been facing up to And I've always known this was true. So many things about yourself that you someday have to confront are things that you always knew.
Oh, yeah, they're sitting right
someday
there.
Someday I'm going to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
And then the day comes.
Yeah, and you're like,
damn it. The line. I thought I wouldn't have to.
The line is drawn by you or someone else.
Yeah.
That is my guest, Mark Maron and Bob Odenkirk from episode 60 of the podcast WTF. So, Mark, if that's where you found your interview style, what was going on the first 59 episodes?
Well, I mean, I don't think that they were any. The first dozen or so were different types of shows. It didn't really evolve into an interview show until a little bit into it, until I moved to Los Angeles. And I think that what that moment in my memory revealed to me was that my assumptions about people were generally wrong, and that, you know, I, because of my own insecurity, I'd always assumed that others were doing better than me, or that they didn't fight the same fights that I had, or they somehow figured something out that I couldn't figure out. So I think that in my memory, that moment where, you know, where Bob Odenkirk, a guy who I'd envied and respected, certainly his work ethic and what he puts out into the world for years, you know, was struggling with a very similar problem that I struggle with. So it just stuck out in my mind as sort of a very sort of powerful moment for me. So I would have to go back and look at those other episodes. I'm sure a lot of that was there, but I remember that being a defining moment for me, that people, if you listen and you sort of engage, will talk very personally about things.
Right. And, you know, Bob Odenkirk, you know, best known for Mr. Show, you know, people might have tuned in expecting to just hear the two of you riffing on various, you know, punchlines and stuff. And instead, you got this, you know, as you say, kind of personal and very vulnerable conversation. And it's expanded in recent years to, you know, other people beyond the comedy world. Lots of musicians have been making their way into your garage there in L.A. You're a musician yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm sort of a kind of, you know, earnest blues guitar player, very limited in my my abilities, but fairly able to connect my heart through my strings in my garage.
So the first pick in your pick three playlist for us is Chuck Berry with Roll Over Beethoven. This is, you know, this would have been before you were born. So how and when did you come to this music?
Well, my father was very much into the music of his youth, and he used to play a lot of. I just remember being in the car, and you know, he'd have an oldies 8-track, he'd have the Dick Clark sort of collection 8-track, and that was always around, and it resonated with me. But there was something about Chuck Berry, about that song, because, you know, the Beatles covered it on the second album, and then, you know, there was another cover that I dug up, I was chasing that song for years for some reason. I was completely blown away by that opening Chuck Berry riff. And I think I actually got to the Chuck Berry one through the Beatles. And then I picked up, you know, Leslie West and Mountain's version. And then I got the London Sessions by Chuck. There was just something that resonated with me deeply when I was a kid with that, you know, 145, that Chuck Berry drive. And eventually that led me everywhere. You know, it led me back to the blues. It led me to a lifelong pursuit of learning that riff. It installed the drive shaft of my musical taste.
Well, I'm gonna write a little letter, I'm gonna mail it to my local DJ. Yeah, it's a jumping little record I want my jockey to play. Roll over Beethoven, I gotta hear it again today. You know my temperature rising, the jukebox blowing a fuse. My heart beating rhythm and my soul keep a singing the blues. Roll over Beethoven, tell Tchaikovsky the news. I got the rockin' pneumonia, I need a shot of rhythm and blues. I caught the rolling off the writer sitting down at a rhythm review. Roll over Beethoven, they're rocking in 2x2. Well, if you feel it and like it, go get your lover, then reel and rock it. Roll it over, then move on up just a trifle further, then reel and rock with. Run another roll over Beethoven, dig these rhythm and blues.
little bit of Chuck Berry's 1956 recording of Roll Over Beethoven. That's on Mark Maron's Pick 3 playlist for us on Soundcheck today. Mark is the host of the bi-weekly podcast WTF, just had its 500th episode, and star and creator of the show Maron, which is now in its second season on IFC. Mark, there's an upcoming episode of your IFC show in which you have this antagonistic kind of high fidelity style relationship with the clerk in a record store, in a vinyl record store.
Hey, do you know about that Blasters record that they recorded in Bakersfield in 1985? I talked to my buddy Dave Alvin, and he told me there's only a few hundred of those around because there was some sort of freak kitchenette fire at the factory and all the masters were destroyed. Do you have that album? Because I'd like to find that album.
No, sorry, don't have it.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Huh. Imagine that. You want to ring that up for me, pal?
Yeah, sure. Also, it was wasn't a kitchenette fire. It was a dumpster fire started by the junkie janitor who nodded off. And also, I can't charge this to your Petco card, ma'am.
Whatever.
What's your feeling about musical snobbery? Are you a musical snob yourself?
No, not at all, because I missed a lot of stuff. I missed a lot of stuff. I mean, I just really, honestly, I'm ashamed to admit, I just listened to Fugazi for the first time, like, you know, a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a musical snob, and my vinyl compulsion seems to be really a desire to want to hear the music that I've never heard before and also the music that I've heard before in a different way. Like, I'm not really a record collector. I am sort of, up to my neck in albums right now, but I seem to be playing everything, and I enjoy the ritual of vinyl. And I know that on some level some people think that might be snobbery, but there's something about, not unlike my podcast, you know, sitting down and talking to somebody for an hour, which seems to be sort of a lost pastime. But, I mean, actually sit down and listen to a record and get up and turn the record over and to look at the cover. It was something I did as a kid, and it's something that I enjoy to do now because I don't really know. You know, life moves so quickly. I don't really know what I enjoy a lot of times. But I do know that I like to play guitar, and I like to sit and listen to records, and I like to do it at the same time sometimes. And, I'm just sort of getting back to that. Obviously, I'm getting back to it with a little better equipment, but it is something that it slows me down, and it's been a great addition to my life. So I don't think I'm a snob because I really don't know that much, and there's always going to be a guy, no matter what record you say, like, this is a great record, there's always going to be a guy that says, yeah, but you don't have the other one that was even better than that. So you can't win that one.
Right, right. To me, that was always the big problem with being a big music fan, which I am, is, you know, you walk a really fine line because you don't want to be that guy who knows all the Matrix numbers and all the outtake sessions and who was playing on what alternate version. I mean, maybe you do want to know that stuff, but you don't want to be
the... It takes a hell of a lot of commitment and a lot of time to do that, and you really got to chase that band or that artist, you know, down their rabbit hole and into a catalog. You know, I've been that guy before, but I don't know. I'm really more of a fan...
Yeah.
Than a nerd like that. I don't, like, I listen to a lot of new music. I listen to a lot of new music on vinyl, and I just see what sticks with me, and then I'll play it a few times. And then if it really sticks, I'll play the hell out of it for a few weeks.
Now, you know, for me, I'm more impressed with someone who will say, yeah, I just listened to Fugazi a couple of months ago for the first time, than someone who, you know, missed Fugazi first time around and just assumed, all right, well, that's in the past. I missed that. I'll just go on to the next thing. You know, that idea of being able to, well, you do this on the podcast too. You know, you kind of admit what you've missed, what you don't know, and you go and do something about it.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing about music is that, there's no late to the party, really, with music. I mean, like, I interviewed, Maynard from Tool in here, and I missed Tool because, I wasn't young and angry and a teenager during Tool's popularity, but it didn't diminish the interview at all. And I got all the Tool records, and I'll fill my head up with this stuff. But the truth of the matter is, good music is pretty timeless. And if it isn't timeless, you can at least appreciate, when and where where it came from, you know, contextually for yourself to sort of enjoy it more. But there's really no too late to the party, except in, you know, the development of your own identity around that music and what it took you to. I mean, obviously, I don't have, you know, the same type of memories of people who were into Fugazi when Fugazi was happening and how that defined their lifestyle. But I can certainly, you know, as an appreciator of music, can come to stuff any time and have my own enjoyment of it. I didn't necessarily live it, but I can enjoy listening to it.
Right. Well, you know, I didn't live in Vienna in the 1820s, but I like Beethoven as much as the next guy. So
exactly.
Mark Maron's with us on Soundcheck, sharing his Pick 3 playlist. And song number 2, Bob Dylan. It's All Right, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding, from 1965. So were you around for the first wave of Dylan? No, probably not.
Well, yeah, it's weird, you know, like when you assigned me this search for music, you know, like I listen to all kinds of music all the time and, you know, from all different eras. But there was something about hearing that guitar riff. You know, I'm really sort of a riff guy. I'm not innately a lyrics guy, but that riff in It's All Right, Ma just was haunting to me, and the sort of kind of momentum of the song and the urgency of what he was saying and how confusing he said it. I thought was just mystifying, and I love the way it sounds. I love the way Dylan, obviously I'm not saying anything new here. The way he turns a phrase and the sort of pace of how he says things, and it's weird because if you listen to Chuck Berry and you listen to Bob Dylan lyrically, on a good day, you know, Chuck Berry is definitely a predecessor to the style of rock lyric that Dylan would write. And they're just, it was one of those songs for me, and there's a few things in my life that I think hold this, is that, you know, it seems like all the answers to all the questions are in this Dylan song. I don't know if you can find them, but I think they're in there.
They're hidden there somewhere, yeah.
And it had that feeling to me, you know, so I can listen to it, and it just takes me to another plane. And there's something about Angry Bob and Urgent Bob that, you know, was always very compelling, and I just love the riff in that song.
Let's hear it. It's All Right, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding, from Bob Dylan.
Temptation's page flies out the door. You follow, find yourself at war. Watch waterfalls of pity roar. You feel the moan, but unlike before, you discover that you just be one more person crying. So don't fear if you hear a foreign sound to your ear. It's all right, Ma, I'm only sighing.
From Bob Dylan's 1965 album, Bringing It All Back Home, that's It's All Right, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding. Another song from Mark Maron's Pick 3 playlist for us on Soundcheck today. Mark is celebrating the 500th episode of his podcast, WTF, and is the star and creator of the show, Maron, now in its second season on IFC. And Mark is with us on the line from L.A., from the very garage where the podcasts are recorded. I suppose when you were you were here in New York for a while, you probably couldn't have done this sort of work here in New York, could you? I mean, who has a garage in New York City?
No, you can do it anywhere. You just got to set up a couple mics and find a comfortable place. The weird thing about doing just vocal or audio recording of people talking, it really can be done anywhere, and I think there are plenty of people that do it. You just need a computer and two mics. But the thing is about the garage is that my entire life is in this garage. Everything I've ever collected or owned, it's all out here, and it's all sort of, you know, in different various sort of states of chaos and organization. So it has a depth to it. For me, you know, I'm surrounded by everything that just relics of whatever got me here. So people are really walking in to my brain and to my life when they walk into the garage. And I think that has some play in terms of making people cozy.
I think, you know, the idea that people walk into an interview and they walk into your garage with your stuff all around them, and suddenly they're thinking, oh, it's not going to be one of those interviews.
you know, I don't know that they really know what to expect. like now people listen to the show, but a lot of times people come out to where I live in L.A. and they're like, where am I? And then when they walk in here, the best thing that can happen is that they don't judge. They sit down, they get distracted, and they don't realize they're on mic anymore, right. And we have a genuine conversation.
Mark Maron's sharing a Pick 3 playlist with us here in Soundcheck today, and your third and final song is one of my all-time personal favorites, the song Heroes by David Bowie. You've mentioned riffs with both the Chuck Berry and the Bob Dylan songs. What is it about Heroes that attracted you?
I don't know. There's something about Heroes that just, you know, makes my heart soar in sort of, you know, a dark but victorious way. You know, I don't even know what the song means really, but you know, the pace of it, there's something longing about it, there's something, you know, intensely kind of sad about it, but there's something, you know, powerful and romantic about it. And by the time, you know, he goes up an octave at the end, you know, it makes my brain explode. It's just a beautiful song.
It's a great, like, love in the face of all obstacles kind of tune.
Exactly.
And some pretty great guitar playing by Robert Fripp on this
always
song. Mark Maron, congratulations on 500 episodes of WTF. The new series of Maron is on the air at IFC, and Mark's been with us from the garage there in L.A., sharing his Pick 3 playlist with us. Mark, thanks for joining us on Soundcheck today.
Thanks a lot, man. Good talk.
Up next, I'll be talking with the retired New York Times sports columnist George Vesey about his new book, 8 World Cups, detailing his memories, some of them quite musical, of covering the world's largest sporting event. He'll share some of his favorite soccer-related songs next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. All this week, we're taking a musical look at the World Cup, the most popular sporting event in the world. Like the Olympics, the World Cup is every 4 years, and this year it's in Brazil. And we're covering it on Soundcheck for two reasons. First, I am a lifelong soccer fan. And second, the World Cup is often a very musical thing. This song by Shakira was the official song of the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. George Vesey was there, covering the event for the New York Times. It was his 8th World Cup. And in fact, the title of George's new book is 8 World Cups, My Journey Through the Beauty and Dark Side of Soccer. George Vesey joins us to talk about some of his favorite music from 8 World Cup tournaments. George, good to see you.
It's always nice to be here, and particularly to have you in my ear telling me new songs.
Well, you sent me an email about the songs you've picked today, and I'm going to quote you here. I am avoiding all the soccer-specific chants and also ducking the crappy Eurotrash music foisted upon us by the tin ears and tin minds of FIFA, the world soccer body. So what's left?
What's left is what's in my headset, what's in my heart from those 8 World Cups. I really try and avoid all that stuff that they blast at you, because to me it's commercial and it's not the music that I want to hear. So I just don't hear it. It's like a one long FIFA is a vuvuzela. You know, it's in your ear, but you don't want
it. Droning and buzzing.
Right, right. And you don't want it, and then it goes away. Eventually it goes away. For me, the World Cup is football, mm-hmm. the great sport, Jogo Bonito, whatever you want to say. And it's also
Jogo Bonito being the Brazilian term for the beautiful game.
Exactly. But more the point is that the music that I hear, the nice thing about going to World Cups is the music that I hear out in the street, on the radio, on the television, in my head, buying a CD, listening to the Brazilian samba band wandering through the Rambla in Barcelona, the first World Cup I covered in 1982, coming across these people, the men and the women, the horns, the drums, the all the stuff, and then the women dancing behind. And how could you not love Brazil after that?
Right.
And I try and take in, I mean, that's as much, I hate to admit it, it's my dirty little secret. I loved those sports, the Tour de France, the World Cup, the Wimbledon, as much for the travel as for the sports themselves. And I tried to weave that in. All these sports have the place interwoven.
Now, in your chapter about your first World Cup, which was in Spain, 1982, it becomes pretty clear that among your strongest memories are not just the games, not just the fans, but a concert that you went to.
Oh, absolutely. It was getting on to my birthday. I don't usually say that, but my birthday is July 4th. And on the night before, it's a strange time to be almost always on the road in those days. But the night before, there was no match, no game. There was nothing I had to do. So I went out and bought a ticket for a concert in a plaza in the beautiful city of Barcelona, which of course didn't start till about 10 o'clock, it being Spain. And the concert was by a Mallorcan folk singer named Maria del Mar Bonet, who is still with us. She's still performing and out there. I looked it up on the web recently. And I knew nothing about it. I went by myself. I sat in a corner somewhere and listened to this, and it was so warm and so still, and the people so respectful. The noise from the street didn't reach into this plaza somehow or other, and out came this lovely woman playing with good musicians that she knew well, and it was such a still, sweet evening. You could hear the chimes, you could hear the drums, you could hear the mandolin, all her instruments and her musicians, and it was so enchanted. And this concert ended after midnight on my birthday, and so the next day I went to El Corte Inglés, which is the big department store in Spain, and I bought a vinyl record. You remember vinyl, John?
You and I remember vinyl.
And so
vinyl is hip again.
That's the amazing thing, is that I've kept almost all my vinyls, and now I know you can buy turntables, you can buy styluses, so anyway, I carried that.
George Vesey, hipster and sports writer.
Oh, gosh. I'm back in style.
Yeah. So we have this record, and we're going to play a little bit of a song called Esperar, which means hope, right?
Hope. It means to hope or to wait. The verb, both in Catalan and in Castilian, means to hope and to wait. And I take it to mean, because I've looked up the lyrics, both in the Spanish and the Catalan, and the lyric talks about when times are bad, when love dies, when things go wrong, when things are at the bottom, falling apart, all you have to do is esperar, esperar, esperar. Now, you could take it as to wait, but in that case, the hopeful, positive, survival tone of the song, Maria del Mar Bonet's song, is to hope, not just to wait.
Let's hear it from the Spanish singer from Mallorca, Maria del Mar Bonet.
O que larga que se fa, sempre l'espera, quan s'espera que vendrà el pitjor. Espera, quan s'espera la mort de l'amor, quan s'espera que tot ja s'acabi, per tot d'una torna a començar, quan s'espera que el món tot s'enfonsi.
Maria del Mar Bonet in a song called Esperar from an album called Alenar?
Alenar, which means to breathe in Catalan.
So she's from Mallorca. Does she sing in Catalan or Spanish
that's
or both?
That's Catalan. She sings in Spanish. I've heard her sing in French from La Lip in Paris, the hall there. And she did live a few English songs also on that.
George Vesey's with us on Soundcheck, the veteran New York Times sports writer, author of the new book, 8 World Cups, My Journey Through the Beauty and Dark Side of Soccer. So this is a strong memory of your first World Cup, Spain, 1982.
Exactly.
And you've covered 8 since, all 8 since then. You are not covering this 9th one in Brazil.
No.
In Brazil.
John, please, please. Things are tough enough. Withdrawal is a hard thing. I retired at the end of 2011. I took a buyout. It was a no-brainer. It was time for me to move on in lots of ways. And I've since been writing. For a while, I was writing a lot for the paper. I don't seem to be doing anything for the World Cup, but I've got my own website, georgevesey.com. I will be watching. And I am shamelessly plugging my book, Great Present for Father's Day. sorry, but you see the point. And now I am eating my heart out.
So the idea of Brazil, you were in South Africa. You mentioned the vuvuzelas earlier. That was just a din, you know, the people blowing these horns, these plastic long trumpet things, you know, people compared it to the buzzing of angry bees and stuff.
Right.
That was probably the loudest World Cup, wasn't it?
It was certainly the loudest in terms of witless noise, although certainly FIFA and the hosts, you know, they ban in Brazil, I'm told, that they are going to ban the samba bands, the impromptu. They're going to not let people bring in their horns and their drums into the stadium, but they're going to blast crummy music that somebody got paid a lot of money to record, or whatever you want to call it. They're going to blast it at you by some popular person. And that's what passes, because the money turns around rather than impromptu music from, you know, la gente, the people.
And yet I suspect this will be the most musical World Cup ever, because the Brazilians will find a way.
Oh, they can't help it.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound condescending. I mean, they're not simple little folk, and we've seen that in the protests of the last year or two, when they have identified FIFA and football and Sepp Blatter as the problem, coming in and superimposing.
Sepp Blatter being the president
FIFA. This expensive program, this expensive World Cup on them, their bus fares go up because the stadiums are being built.
Right. So, George, you will not be in Brazil for this World Cup, but you travel there musically. Is that the rationale for this next song?
It's the only way to go, John. I mean, if and maybe, you know, I will get to Brazil eventually, somehow, sometime. But maybe the World Cup is the worst time, given the fact that this might be the most news-intensive World Cup that one could cover. The impression might be less of the football being played and the fun stuff. And that's the way reporters have to go with it. But I am... on my headset, I was just, coming over here on the subway, I was looking at all the music on my iPod and iPad, and the music is, there's a lot of Brazilian stuff on there. There's Jorge and Ana and Carolina and Caetano Veloso, and a lot of songs by Jobim. So I have a lot of Brazil already in there.
And the song we're going to hear next is a Jobim song, in a somewhat unusual and very distinctive recording.
Well, John, you're responsible for this, so you have to take the. It's not the blame, believe me. It's the credit. One night I was sitting around, and you played this lovely album called Casa by Marillenbaum to Sakamoto, to a Brazilian couple and a Japanese pianist. And it was just stunning. I went out and, in those days, actually, you went to a store and you bought it. You didn't download it. So I went out and bought it, and I've been playing it ever since. I think it was about 2001, two, something like that. And I've been playing it. I mean, it's exquisite. The blending of these three lovely instruments into one, what you'd say is a jazz trio.
Paula Morellenbaum singing, her husband Jacques Morellenbaum playing the cello, Ryuichi Sakamoto playing
exactly.
the piano, and the album called Casa because it was recorded in Jobim's house.
Wow.
On his piano. And here's a song called Samba do Avião. From the album Casa, recorded in the house of the great Brazilian songwriter Antonio Carlos Jobim, that is the trio known as Morellenbaum 2 Sakamoto, and their version of the Jobim song Samba do Avião, picked for us by George Vesey, the veteran sports writer and author of the new book 8 World Cups, My Journey Through the Beauty and Dark Side of Soccer. Paula Morellenbaum is from Rio, so I recognize the Rio de
Janeiro. That's the Brazilian way of pronouncing Portuguese. The R's become the H, like Romário and Ronaldinho and Ronaldo and so on.
Right. And that song?
That song is the song of the song of the airplane. Tony Bennett did it many years ago, called The Song of the Jet, which has slightly different lyrics. It's a man singing it. In her case, she's singing this love song to her city. There's Jobim's lyrics, not hers, of course. And the plane is coming in, heading toward the airport, which is named after Galileo. Imagine how cool is that? And then she starts to sing here. And then it ends, that the plane lands. You can hear the plane. You can almost see the white from the tires. And then you can hear her, and she says, taxi. And then, right. And then the two musicians play a long kind of riff on the theme and so on, and it's just gorgeous. But it catches you the sense of coming home. Anywhere home is home. Is homecoming is beautiful, but in this case, to be going into this beautiful city, circling and whatever you see, circling into Brazil, into Rio, it's got to be gorgeous.
All right, so you will not be making that flight for this World Cup, but at least you have the song to console you.
I can play it every day.
George Vesey's with us on Soundcheck with some soccer adjacent songs. His book is called 8 World Cups, and he has, in fact, covered the last 8 World Cups for the New York Times. You called Zinedine Zidane, the somewhat controversial French soccer player, you called his performance in the 1998 finals the best that you've seen in a final, and that you sort of associate that with the playing of La Marseillaise.
Exactly.
But you've chosen for us a different national anthem. Why?
Oh, some anthems are great for sports. You've got the Russian national anthem, which I love. Oh, Canada, how wonderful is that? But for hockey and other things. Mm-hmm. But I chose the Italian national song, the Italian anthem, Il Canto degli Italiani. And I chose it because my first World Cup, I saw the Italians play 4 times, and they won all 4 times. They won the championship. And 4 times in a couple of weeks in this enchanted place, Spain. Anyway, but I came to love the Italians for their gritty comeback, for their counterattack that won them the championship. And the music itself is like a merry little tarantella, and yet... And I associate also with the Azzurri, the blue shirts,
the blue uniforms,
that the team wears. They are the Azzurri. But the song itself, it sounds so sweet and folky. And when I looked up to make sure what I was hearing, I looked up the lyrics, and the lyrics are much more stirring and patriotic. We will die for you. We will defend the country, the homeland, la patria. That it was like that, and so it was much more committed than it sounds in the music.
Well, and the Italian team, obviously, very committed. You got a pick for us?
I'm going to quote the great Gary Lineker, captain of England, who once said, soccer is a simple game. Players chase the ball for 90 minutes, and in the end, Germany wins.
On penalty kicks.
Oh, penalty kicks.
That's the end of the quote. The 90 minutes and then the Germans win on penalty kicks.
They did that year. They did in 1990, for sure.
So you're thinking that soon?
I think Germany has just enough ability to play and also to ward off the craziness. I think the Brazil team is going to be affected by whatever happens there. I think Germany, Spain may have just one too many dog years from winning 3 championships in a row. I love Spain. I just think Germany is due for a breakthrough in this generation.
All right, George Vesey picking a winner for the World Cup that begins in Brazil this week, and picking the Italian national anthem, Il Canto degli Italiani, as a favorite musical memory of 8 World Cups, documented in his new book of that name. George, great to see you. Thanks
so much. Always a pleasure, and particularly to hear you.
Oh, yeah.
this week we're talking about the musical side of soccer and the World Cup. Visit soundcheck.org to hear more. Coming up next, the band Kanwa Khan creates lush, cinematic soundscapes on its debut album, Moving On. The LA band plays live for us here in our New York studio, next on Soundcheck.
At the edge, and we bring it down. If I walked away, would you turn around?
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This Los Angeles band, Kanwa Khan, is a six-piece, but boy, do they sound bigger than that. Now, the band name may require some explaining. Fortunately, they are here in the studio and can fill us in on such details. And, of course, they'll give us a taste of their cinematic-sounding new record called Moving On. In fact, this first song is the title track, Moving On. The band is Kanwa Khan, live on Soundcheck.
The ghost of you and I, and this I can disguise. Said you had me for a fool, but I got what I need from you. Drag your shadow down the hall. Thank you.
The band is called Kan Wakan from L.A., playing live here in our New York studio on Soundcheck. And that song, Moving On, is the title track of the band's recent album. Let me introduce you to the members of Kan Wakan. You heard Christiane Bautista singing, George Lenevre playing keyboard and guitar, Peter Patyandi also playing keyboard and guitar. Jesse Aumiller plays still more keyboards, will be playing a bit of saxophone as well. Federico Orlandini playing the bass, and Amir Usman behind the drum kit. They are collectively the band Kan Wakan, and George and Peter joining me at the microphones. Guys, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
So, Peter, where does the band name come from? Because I've read two very different sort of derivations of the Kan Wakan.
Yeah. So when we were coming up with the name, we were looking for a term that was going to be really rhythmic because we started out really interested in rhythmic minimalist music. And have sort of gotten more into rhythmic electronic music.
Right.
So we were playing around with a bunch of different words, throwing them up on a whiteboard, jumbling them together, and that's the one that sort of popped out, and it's loosely derived from the Tagalog phrase Kalawakan. Am I pronouncing that right, Christian? Kalawakan. which roughly translates to atmosphere, interstellar, deep space.
Really? There's a Tagalog word for interstellar and deep space? I had no idea.
Yeah, we had no idea either.
All right. Now, George, the sound of this band, I mean, it's Peter mentions, like, you know, early minimalism, but by which you mean what? Like Steve Reich,
Philip Glass?
Philip Glass, yeah. I mean, I hear a lot of Terry Riley, another of those early minimalists.
Oh, cool.
But there's also the sound of the kind of, you know, like when the psychedelic 60s began to infect film score music, and you would hear like these big spy movies with huge swelling orchestras. You know, was the cinematic aspect of this music there at the beginning as well as the rhythmic stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it started out just as minimalist classical music. You know, it was strings in the beginning, so the cinematic element was definitely there from the get-go.
And the strings, I mean, you have an actual string orchestra on the record, the Metamorphosis Chamber Orchestra, right?
Yeah, that was a string section put together by my uncle, who flew out from New York. He's a conductor. So he came out, and it was a 14-piece ensemble that we put together from USC students and friends of friends, just kind of like makeshift orchestra.
Okay. It sounds great. I mean, it has this, as I say, this kind of really big sound to it. And in terms of, you know, the cinematic, again, this kind of quality. George, have you written for television in the past?
I've written cues for TV and commercials. That's what I was doing right before the band, yeah.
So do you usually have some kind of visual image as a kind of a seed for a song?
It's not really premeditated. I find that I'll find the visual image once the music is there a lot of times.
Well, now, Peter, this next song actually did appear on television. The song Like I Need You was used by HBO,
That's
right?
That's correct, yeah. Very exciting.
What was that? Did you, first of all, I assume you knew about it before you saw it or heard it on TV for the first time.
Yeah, well, I didn't see it until it was on air, but I knew about it, of course.
And what did you think?
I think it exceeded all our expectations. I think we were maybe expecting to hear 20 seconds of the song optimistically.
Right.
And the fact that they cut it together as a dramatic piece that really worked with the footage and really showcased about, what was it, like 2.5 minutes of the song. It was really extraordinary.
So it was like a big kind of trailer, basically, for the whole new HBO season, right?
Yeah, you know, really, really shocking action scenes with John Malkovich and the folks from True Blood and True Detective and all that stuff set to our music. That was pretty fun.
Yeah. You want to play it for us?
Absolutely. Yeah. Here we go.
All right. The band is Kan Wakan. The spelling of that name, by the way, is K-A-N and then W-A-K-A-N. The album's called Moving On, and it does have this almost orchestral sweep to it. This song is called Like I Need You, and they're able to recreate that orchestral sweep right here in our Soundcheck studio. It's Kan Wakan, live on Soundcheck. Thank you.
trouble is unknown, but I feel so fatalistic. Got a thousand ways to show and choose in my lipstick. I'm gonna let you know just who I am, and to make you realize, gonna make you understand. Want you to do just what I want you to. Come on, baby.
That is the band Kan Wakan live on Soundcheck with a song called Like I Need You. It's on their album called Moving On, but you just heard a live performance. Big band with a big setup here in the Soundcheck studio. Peter, you mentioned before that you guys sort of began looking at classical minimalism, moved to electronic music. It doesn't sound like you mean the current crop of EDM, electronic dance music, when you refer to electronics.
That's just Jesse. I think he's in that world. But we love him.
So when you say electronic music, like what period, what style are you looking at?
I think George would be the one to ask about that.
George?
I think it's more like electronic elements rather than electronic music as a whole. Mm-hmm. It's just influenced by like old drum machines, you know, like bands like Air, like using like drum machines like that, early Radiohead stuff.
So it's the sound more than a style or a genre that you
I think were, so, yeah. Yeah. Just incorporating some of those sounds and not necessarily calling it electronic sound as a whole, you know.
Right. The band is Kan Wakan. The album's called Moving On, and they've been playing for us here on Soundcheck today. It's an impressive sound. Guys, thanks so much for performing for us.
It's been our pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Tomorrow on the show, songwriter and singer Jenny Lewis rose to prominence as the vocalist for the guitar pop band Rilo Kiley. Her latest solo album is called The Voyager, and it was 6 years in the making. It's not out yet, but we'll get a preview right here in the Soundcheck studio. Plus, veteran music journalist David Brown recently released an ebook detailing why 1976 was, quote, the year the counterculture became the culture, unquote. We'll take a listen to the sounds of that year. And before the World Cup kicks off on Thursday, we'll dip into the long history of Brazilian songs about soccer. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.